Well, I'm Kerry Emanuel. I'm a professor of atmospheric science at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Most of my group works on the phenomenon called tropical cyclones, which is the generic word for hurricane. Hurricane is a regional term used in the Atlantic and Eastern Pacific, but we study this phenomenon all around the world. And we got started because back in the early 1980s, it became apparent to me that the existing theory for how hurricanes develop and what controls their strength was simply wrong, didn't work. So we had to do something else, and it started us down the road of developing a theory for hurricanes, which we have done to some extent. It's incomplete, but it addresses certain aspects of the storms. Namely their energetics. Where do they get their energy from, and can you predict how strong they can be? Naturally, when you develop a theory, you want to test it, and so we also go into the field and do experiments in real hurricanes to test that. We also build computer models of hurricanes, which serve as another kind of experimental test bed to try out ideas about how these work. This led into a more complete investigation of what does it take to predict the intensity of hurricanes. For various reasons, we break the weather forecasting problem of hurricanes down into these two separate things. They're not really separate, but it's easier to talk about them that way. That is where they will go, the so-called hurricane track prediction problem, and how strong will they or weak will they be when they hit land or some point of interest. And there's been a lot of progress on the first problem, as we've gotten pretty good at predicting where hurricanes will go. It's not that hard a problem because it doesn't depend very much on the internal workings of a hurricane. Basically, they're like corks floating in a stream, the stream being the rest of the atmosphere. If you know where the rest of the atmosphere is going, if you know the large-scale structure of atmospheric flow, you can pretty much predict hurricanes. And our ability to predict where hurricanes will go is only limited today by our general ability to predict the weather.
How good are we at predicting the path of hurricanes now?
Well, it's quantified so that at a 24-hour forecast, a one-day forecast, has a typical error of about 100 kilometers in space. And that amplifies. So a two-day forecast is more like 200 kilometers.
So the Weather Service will be able to give predictions at that sort of level so that people can get themselves out of the path of these hurricanes. I mean, how does that compare with 10 years ago, say?
Well, 10 years ago, the one-day forecast was as bad as about a three-day forecast. Well, 10 years ago, it wasn't so different. But 30 years ago, one-day forecast was about as bad as a three-day forecast is today.
Mm. And so we've come a long way. Things are getting better as well.
Things are getting better, but there's a limit to how good they can get because the atmosphere is an example of a chaotic physical system. You perturb it slightly, that perturbation amplifies. Over time, it dominates everything. So for the general reasons, you can't predict the weather, you can't predict hurricanes. Mm. We'll go after a certain time. In other words, we might be able to predict it with some useful skill out to 4 or 5 days. Beyond that, your guess is as good as ours. I mean, an intelligent guess without data is as good as ours.
You alluded to the fact that earlier you do a lot of basic science here as well about trying to work out how hurricanes form in the first place. Can you give us a sort of a 101 on how hurricanes form?
Yeah, I will. I want to back up one step, though, and to say that our group doesn't work on the track problem. That's sort of the solved part of the problem. The thing that wasn't solved was the intensity, and it's still not really solved. We do a lousy job predicting how violent hurricanes will be when they strike land. And there's been no real improvement in those forecasts for as long as we've been doing it. It's a much trickier problem because it does depend upon the internal workings. We have made theoretical progress in this to the point where we have a pretty good idea of why we can't do this yet. One of the reasons being is that hurricanes churn up cold water from the depths of the ocean as they're moving along. That tends to limit their intensity. And to predict that, we know how to handle those physics in computer models. You actually have to know right now what the temperature of the ocean is beneath the surface. Well, we know what the surface temperature is very well from satellites, but we don't know what the subsurface temperature is very well at all, and we'll have to improve that before we can improve intensity. It makes a big difference. A Category 1 hurricane in the United States essentially does not do any damage at all, just negligible, hardly ever hurts anybody. But a Category 3 hurricane is a completely different kettle of fish. And yet, 2 days out, maybe even 1 day out, we can't predict that difference.
What are the factors in deciding what makes a hurricane a big hurricane, an intense one?
Well, the what we believe to be the case is that, first of all, the warm water, the warmer the water, the more intense it can get. But it's not that simple. The warm water has to be quite thick. In many places, say the Gulf of Mexico, that warm water layer is only 20 meters deep. It's not very deep at all. And the hurricanes have no trouble churning up cold water and diluting that warm water. In places in the Caribbean, and also in the Gulf of Mexico, depending upon where you look, you might find warm water that's 100 meters deep. And in that case, hurricanes have a very hard time finding cold water to pull up to the surface. But that's only part of the problem. Another big problem is that when the hurricane exists in an atmosphere whose wind outside the hurricane changes direction and or speed with height, call that wind shear. Wind shear is known to be empirically to be detrimental to hurricanes. It stops them developing, and once they're developed, it weakens them. And yet we're not 100% sure of why that's so. That it's so is clear. The fact that we don't know why it's so means that we don't, for example, know exactly what altitudes that we need to define the shear over. Also, predicting wind shear isn't so easy. But those are some of the kinds of physical processes that limit things. Now, under ideal conditions, we have no shear, and if we have very deep warm water, hurricanes will usually, over a period of days, reach the maximum intensity that they can have in that thermodynamic environment. We call that their potential intensity. Potential intensity is easy to calculate. We know what it is right now. I can show you a map of it around the world today, if you'd like. It's a function of the ocean temperature and the whole temperature of the atmosphere up to the lower stratosphere.
Where are the hot spots?
Well, in general, the highest potential intensities are in the equatorial Western Pacific and Indian Oceans. At this time of year, probably the highest right now is in the Coral and Timor Seas to the north of Australia.
And is that where you tend to find the strongest hurricanes?
Yes. Yeah, I think, when we look at long-term risk assessment, one place we're very worried about are the cities in far northern Australia, like Darwin, where in principle, you could have a hurricane with 220 mile-per-hour winds. It hasn't happened, but in theory it could. In the summer, in the northern hemisphere, the highest potential intensities are in the western North Pacific to the east of the Philippines and in the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico. Those are very high potential intensities there.
So given all of these problems in working out the intensity of hurricanes, have you tried to do it anyway?
Oh, yes. We actually do try to do it. In fact, we have been posting forecasts, intensity forecasts, of every storm that exists in real time. I can show you that on the web. 4 times a day, and we, at the end of the season or at the end of the year, we compare the skill of those forecasts to the skill of official intensity forecasts. Some of the forecasting agencies, so for example, the Navy runs an operation called the Joint Typhoon Warning Center out of Hawaii. It used to be in Guam. Use this as one of their guidance products.
It's an experimental thing at the moment.
It's experimental.
But they're using it to improve their predictions.
They're using it to help with their predictions.
And how useful is it in the field?
For a simple model, it's a very simple model. I mean, it can run a hurricane track in 20 seconds on that laptop. Whereas the competing models are big supercomputer models, you have to call the power company before you run. It does pretty well. And you can run large ensembles, which means you run many forecasts with slightly different assumptions about the actual state of the atmosphere to get a range of uncertainty. Those ensemble forecasts are usually better than single forecasts.
Do you think that these models will get better and to an extent where we will reliably be able to predict the intensity like we predict the path?
That isn't clear yet. And your question touches on what we call the fundamental predictability. That is, in theory, if we had a perfect model, given the fact that we don't know the state of the system perfectly at any given time, how well could we do if we had a perfect model? There are strategies for answering that question. And it's called predictability studies, and they're just beginning to address this particular problem of hurricane intensity. I'm a little bit pessimistic about it, to tell you the truth. It doesn't seem to be all that predictable. The other thing that we will need to do, however, in any case, is to make much better measurements of the upper ocean beneath the surface, say the first 200 meters, for which we will need to field special instruments and so on.
So the areas which are most at risk, to have a hurricane warning system properly, you would need, would you need sensors there pretty much all the time, giving you a sort of real-time feed of the
Not necessarily all the time. I mean, what you're really interested in is the structure of the ocean in the projected path of the storm with some uncertainty. So one of the strategies is to fly an airplane out. In fact, you routinely fly airplanes into Atlantic hurricanes. But on the way to the hurricane or on the way back, drop special sensors from the airplane, which have been around for decades. There's nothing new. They float down to the surface on a parachute, but once they're on the surface, they float and they deploy a spool of wire which measures the temperature down into the ocean.
And this would immeasurably improve the models.
We think it would improve the intensity forecast.
Okay, so lots of complications, obviously. And how does the issue of climate change affect this sort of modeling and prediction?
Well, that has been a really hot topic of research, and especially in my group, we've focused on that in recent years. The general question is, how does climate change affect hurricanes? And secondarily, how does it affect your ability to predict them? And the first paper about this was written 21 years ago in Nature magazine. It addressed the narrow question of how does this potential intensity vary with climate. And the prediction back then has withstood the test of time. All kinds of other people have predicted this too, that roughly speaking, although it isn't just a simple function of the ocean temperature, it's close enough that you can say that for every degree centigrade you warm the ocean, the wind speeds will go up by about 6%. Okay, so if you have a maximum intensity, potential intensity of 150 miles per hour, and you raise the ocean temperature by a degree centigrade, it would go up to about 157 miles per
hour.
This
just stems from the basic sort of physics of this, which is that warmer sea surface temperatures create more intense hurricanes.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't quite that simple, unfortunately. Even if you hold the ocean temperature constant and decrease the strength of the trade winds, the usual breezes that blow in the tropics, you'll get a more intense hurricane, too. It's not just ocean temperature. But we know the important thing is we know how to calculate it. And so we can go into the climate models that are being used, for example, for the IPCC and ask very straightforwardly, how does the potential intensity change? And it goes up. And, you know, it varies from model to model, but at about, you know, sea surface temperature change also varies from model to model, but at about the rate that's theoretically projected. And at first we said, well, that's modest enough that we probably wouldn't be able to detect it in real hurricanes maybe until another 50 years go by. So we weren't particularly worried about that. That theory is narrowly conceived. It tells you an upper limit for how strong hurricanes can get, but it does not address, or does not obviously address, issues like how big will the hurricane get physically, how large, how long will it last, and how many will there be. Those are all left unanswered. And so back in 2004, we were looking at a particular metric of hurricanes, which we've become very fond of in the meantime, which is called their power dissipation. It's very analogous to the Richter scale for earthquakes. It's a measure of how much energy is generated by hurricanes over their lifetime, and then over all the hurricanes in a particular season. So it's a function of the number of storms, how strong they get, and how long they last.
So you measure this for a season of hurricanes?
Yes, typically for a whole season. And we came up with that because we thought that energy was a much more direct, useful measure of hurricanes than numbers. I mean, we've had this tradition of counting hurricanes in my profession, which in hindsight is very unhealthy, because not only does nature not care, we don't care. Meteorologists care because it's easy to count. But, you know, you have a tropical storm that has 35 mile per hour winds, and you're going to put that in the same kettle of fish as a Katrina, which releases five times more energy, five orders of magnitude more energy, sorry, like, you know, 100,000 times more energy. I don't think so. You would never see a seismologist say that there were 24,632 earthquakes last year around the world. It'd be thought properly crazy. But we got stuck into this mold in meteorology. Everybody wants to count hurricanes. It doesn't make any sense to do that in hindsight. When you look at the power metric, all sorts of things suddenly become obvious that weren't obvious before. Like, this is spectacularly well correlated with the ocean temperature in the Atlantic. Much better correlated than any of the traditional metrics like intensity of storms or number of storms or things like that. And so that was kind of a step forward, although we don't fully understand it. So empirically, though, there's no doubt that as you warm the ocean, the amount of power generated by hurricanes goes up rather spectacularly.
So the idea is that this index is a way of tracking the intensity and power of a season of hurricanes over time, so you can see that climate change probably will increase this power dissipation index over time.
Oh, we can see it happening. Yeah. And far before we could see it happening in some of the traditional metrics like intensity. And moreover, it is by accident, I think, to some extent, of much more interest in human beings. The destructiveness of a windstorm goes up with their power, not with their wind speed. Mm. And the power goes as wind speed cubed, by the way. And so we're not really interested in the wind speed or even how many hurricanes we have. We're interested in the sum of the power dissipation, just like nature is. So generally speaking, we expect over a long period of time damage to go up with this. But with a strong caveat that, you know, we're measuring power dissipation over the whole life of the storm. But if the storm does any damage at all, it's for a very narrow segment of its lifetime when it's making landfall, typically 1-2% of its life.
Isn't the danger, though, that if a storm is not very powerful but lasts a long time, that it would have the same power dissipation as something like Katrina but lasting only one day? But the latter storm would be much more damaging.
That's right. And the thing is that you'd have to have it last many, 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 many times as long, because the power dissipation goes up as the wind speed cubed. So even a Katrina will have more power dissipation by far than a tropical storm that goes across the whole ocean. Moreover, on top of that, it turns out that in general there's a correlation between the track length of the storm and its power, its intensity. If you have a Cat 5 storm, it's more likely to have a long track. Now, Katrina didn't, actually. But in general, it is.
We've been talking sort of around Katrina a little bit, but Katrina was obviously one of the biggest storm to hit the United States in recorded history, I think. Am I right?
Well, it depends upon how you measure things. It was far and away the most expensive.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
So, in many indexes, it was quite a devastating
storm.
But
there have been. It was only a Category 3 hurricane when it made landfall. It was a bit geometrically a bit bigger than normal, but there have been bigger ones before. Mm. So it was not meteorologically unusual.
What made it so devastating?
Because it hit a place which was known to be extremely vulnerable. It had nothing to do, I mean, everybody knew that New Orleans was going to be wiped off the face of the earth sooner or later. It was just a ticking time bomb. And Katrina happened to be the fuse that set it off. But it was, there have been worse hurricanes on the Gulf Coast. If, you know, Katrina went into South Texas, you would have heard about it on the news, but it would not have caused a large loss. But Hurricane Brett, do you remember Hurricane Brett?
No.
No. That's a trick question. Nobody does. It was in the late 90s. It was stronger than Katrina. It went into southern Texas. You don't remember it because it didn't. It killed some cows, basically.
Are storms of that intensity, though, can you already see them increasing in number because of things like climate change? I mean, I'm reluctant to say, you know, the Katrina was the cause of climate change. Of course it wasn't. You can't do one storm.
When you look over all of them, you do see a climate signal, pretty strong climate signal in the Atlantic. There's controversy about what causes the climate change. What we see basically is a warming of the Atlantic that peaked in the 1950s, and then it actually cooled down into the 1980s, and then it's been warming up very rapidly since then. And integrated over 5 years, the year to year is a lot of random stuff when you go from 1 year to the next. Only about half of that signal is related to climate. The other half is just the throw of the die, that's all. But when you look over 5 years, you see this tight relationship between hurricane power and ocean temperature. It's spectacularly tight. And it's not disputed that there is such a relationship. What's under dispute is why the ocean temperature did this number that I just described. So power dissipation in the Atlantic has almost doubled in the last 30 years. I mean, it's not a few percent change. It's a doubling. It's big. Yeah.
Can you paint a picture of how this is going to change in the future?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, as we like to say over here. What's going to happen in the future? And the problem is that our tools for going into the future are not ideally suited to addressing this question. Climate models are too coarse to resolve hurricanes. They get something, but they're not strong enough. They're not as strong as natural storms. Certainly we would be ahead of the game if we understood in detail why hurricanes in the Atlantic, for example, changed the way they did over the 20th century. Why does power dissipation follow sea surface temperature so tightly? We don't know yet. That's a subject of vigorous research. And why did the ocean, by the way, do that? Was that partly a natural fluctuation of the Atlantic, or was there a global warming signal? I think it's very clear that there's a strong global warming signal and a global cooling signal. I mean, we're not just putting greenhouse gases in. We're also putting sulfur in the atmosphere. And during the 80s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, climate scientists now pretty much agree that that had a cooling effect on the climate. Greenhouse gases hadn't caught up, if you will, to the sulfur yet. And that we actually may have suppressed hurricanes by accident in the Atlantic in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, accidentally by doing this. But there's another school of thought that says this is a natural cycle. Mm. It's a little hard to look at a time record with two peaks and one trough and conclude from that there's a cycle, but that doesn't stop some people. Anyway, we don't understand the reasons for that, and that hampers us going into the future.
But from the linkages people have already made between sea surface temperatures rising and the potential for hurricanes to increase, do you see any limit to how much these things can increase? Or is it that in 50 years or so, 100 years, perhaps we'll reach the peak?
There's not really a theoretical limit for that. But the models going forward into the future, actually some of them show power dissipation decreasing as you warm the planet. Some others show it increasing. And we like to know why. Global warming not only warms the ocean, but warms the atmosphere. And that's accounted for in most theories. What hasn't been accounted for until recently is that as you warm the atmosphere, in one critical metric, you dry it out, particularly a few kilometers above the ground, and that dryness is detrimental to both the formation and the intensity of hurricanes. And that is something you don't see if you warm the ocean without warming the atmosphere. It's a property of warming the atmosphere too. So the projected decrease in hurricane activity is related to this drying out of the atmosphere. We don't know how realistic those projections of drying are in comparison to the predictions of warming.
But in conclusion, are we pretty certain that hurricanes will get worse based on carbon emission?
I think we're pretty certain they'll get worse. All the quarrel is how much. Will be a few percent or will be 100%. There's a huge range of uncertainty.
So aside from the sort of impacts of Katrina on the U.S. itself, did Katrina raise the profile of hurricane science across the university and in academia itself? I mean, did you find people more interested in it now?
Oh, well, certainly there are. I mean, a lot more people show up at hurricane conferences, a lot more students say they're interested in hurricanes, so it's had a big influence that way. The media have been much more interested in hurricanes, so people like me get interviewed a lot more by people like you. But, you know, time will only tell whether we really start to get a good influx of talent now into hurricane research. It's badly needed.